when are you getting a child?
Yeah, she had a fever, you say, made her heart bad. When did she first have to sit, essentially stay in bed all the time? When did that start?
Well, she wouldn't stay in bed all the time, she'd get up. But sometimes she had to. And on this particular case, with a bad bomb banging round, I was working down Johnson's and I was up on the tower on a furnace.
Which tier are you using?
I'm using this one. Yeah. And, I left the bleeding furnace and all locked run out. Yeah, she was, because she's upstairs in bed. But I ain't got round to that. But anyway, I worked in there when the war broke out.
So he worked, where is this? He worked in Rothschild?
Johnson, eh?
Johnson, but what was that?
That was down Cartwell's Road. Well, I'd had jobs in between on a building. Yeah,
what were you doing there?
I worked in the, well, you couldn't call it a foundry, it was the castings that there was the moulders and, you know, they did the moulding of, oh, I forget that. I did the moulding, so when the crane brought a great big bowl full of stuff around, you know, you forget skip and tipped it over, they poured the metal into the sand. Of course, after it was set, they knocked the sand away and left the casting.
Yeah, sand casting, yeah.
See? Well, I was working in the shop there then, and of course, you had some you had to pull up, they were so heavy that you had a chain of tackle, like, and picked them up, pulled them up, and took them down to where the trimmers were. They should chop them up and grind them and make around in general, you know?
Yeah.
So, anyway, I was there when the war started. No, I've had one, Jim, only one.
Okay.
And I watched my diabetes ain't too good, and we ain't got enough clinic sticks here properly. We did bring enough for 6 days, actually, and what, not about three, but I put plenty of pills in myself, and, you know, it was like, and I didn't get quite enough of mother. Anyway, she'd go up till Tuesday morning. So, anyway, it's the war started, and doing street patrols and fire pickets and all sorts. You had to do fire pickets in the firm.
How did you get into
what?
There all through the firm, or did you do other things like that?
Yeah, the what?
When you said you did fire pickets and things like that.
Well, you didn't hit one in the firm, one down the street, so you got organised that.
Yeah, how was that organised?
Organised, so you did it every night, apparently.
Yeah, did they come and ask you, or did you get an officer or somebody?
No, we all sort of got together, the men. I think the shopkeeper bloke down the bottom, he was his idea, he'd come round, I forget his name, and he had misfortune because his wife died in her sleep, and the boy was beside her, and he went to wake his mum up, she was dead. A shop right down the bottom, on the corner, but it was under New Orleans.
By the station,
that's right, on our side of the road, right on the corner. As you went down the bottom, turned to go up Great Eastern.
It was what you used to call Jesse's,
huh? That's right. It wasn't then. It was then, but it wasn't then. The different bloke had it then. But his wife died in her sleep. And the baby was trying to wake her up, his little baby. He couldn't. But anyway, to get back, he was the bloke that said, well, we do so and so. We used to meet in that shed next door to Evans over the road. There was a shed over the road, and all the onion sellers used to lodge in New Greece. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Come out, when they come out of France, they have to lodge there, keep all their onions and that in this loft in this shed next door to Evans, Barley Evans across the road. Anyway, we used to meet there every night and sit down and enjoy that while we was waiting for the barley to start. I was down the street, do the fire watching here, and you had to take turns at the firm, you had to go down here one night. See, so of course I had to go there, and bloke up the top there was a mate of mine. He used to work at a chemical factory. As a matter of fact, he had such an accident, it burnt all his face and all the rest of it. But anyway, let's digress and get away from it. They go down the phone one night, and the other one, of course, you did it for yourself. I mean, we didn't walk up and down the street, we sat in the house right at the time, yeah, kissing in the Western Street.
Mm-hmm.
Me and the bloke I was with, even my mate, right up the top, I forget his name now, Bert something. Of course, when I've been there, started, we just go out in the street. Well, I was with Foster that night, and when the bomb came down, and it buried churches where the debris was, about the bomb came, and we was out in the street, and we didn't hear it.
What bomb was this? It was the one that knocked down the houses in...
It was a blitz, it was. That's when they first started bombing London. And,
You're talking about... Where round where Western Street was...
Yeah, you know the debris.
You're talking about the back was where the first bomb came in.
No, yeah, but of course round that, they didn't do the damage round here so much as they did... Well, they did...
But all of the back had gone, didn't it? Where there was a couple of houses.
Yeah, they knocked the rest of it down. But a lot of it had gone. That was Cullen Street, where we used to live.
Yeah.
And anyway, I was in the trench when the dugout one night, and morning round, bloke came and said, keep the dugout, he said, Ray Warden, don't come out. So there's a landmine hanging on a lamppost, caught on a bar, you know. So, of course, and I said to the bloke, a landmark? I said, a landmark hanging on a bar. You know, I was incredulous. And I remember Amy saying to me, call me in a liar, because I was always, you know, abrupting whatever I said. So, no, I don't mean to, I said, but it's, I ain't grasped it yet. Anyway, the mob come and took it away. But I was out in the street with Foster when that bomb come down. It's another bloke I knew for ages, and his wife, and they were buried right underneath, see? Anyway, they dug them out. And I went to go through at the back. It was, all I was doing was eating grit. Couldn't see anything. And there was a crash come down there, and I was with Foster, and I lost sight of him. And I crept along a little way, and there's a gate, a front street door. And, of course, I pushed the door, and if I'd have gone in, I'd have gone down the bleed. No, the other side, of course. All there was a front standing with a door. And out the back of it was a great big gap, and the air raid shelter and all the old shemazah was all buried underneath the stuff.
Which house was this?
Churches. Bloke named Church.
Where was it in the street with respect to where we live?
Well, next to that little bomb of Goofy's. Where the debris was, you know, the debris just started in the street. When he went round where they had, I think he was there when they had a stage show round there. As he went up by Goofy's, and there was a great big gap, wasn't it? Well, there.
Oh, the gap as you went up the street.
That's it, that was where it was.
No, it's not the gap.
Well, they had a water tank round there. They put a water tank up at the police, didn't they? In there, the water, I don't know what it was. Well, they put a water tank up, put it up the IRA, the firemen, running this stuff out. Well, anyway. I got a lot of people and took them down a dugout, down the railway, because the central line hadn't been built yet. See, so I took them down, and of course the warden let me go in, I just brought them down. So he said, where are you going? I said, going out, I said. So he said, you can't go out there, he said, now. Yeah. I said, I can, you know, I said, but I'm going. He said, we ain't got no tin out now. I said, no one about that. I said, I'll find myself a dustbin lid. Because people out there, I said, buried us, so they want someone to get them out. So, of course, I come out of there, and out the top, anyway, they got her out. Church and his wife, because they were scared to death, and his kids. They wasn't armed, but I knew him from Margaret Street. He lived down there, down about West End Lane, Margaret Street, near the church. And, of course, from there we had all sorts of capers happen. Well, when I get back to when I was at work, there's another log. They used to sit on the floor and have the grub. So then I put a stop to that. But there's a bloke there, he came from Ilford, and he had a disease. They knew he was going to die or something. That was blood. He was a big bloke, he was. A Georgie, something his name was. They had an election. And they wanted to elect a spokesman for the shop floor, you know. So, anyway, they picked me. Of course, I said, well, I don't know. I said, I suppose I might as well have it. I said, I'll get in trouble if I don't. Anyway, I always get in trouble. I said, so I might as well start all having trouble. So, don't come to me and tell me no fairy tales. I I said, of course, all you've got to do, I said, you've got a complaint, you go and tell the governor. And if you think it's fair enough, I said, you can come and tell me and I'll decide whether we can do something about it. So but don't come and tell me the Three Bears or whatever it is before it starts. Because I ain't going to rush over there and tell them all I said and they don't know anything about it. So anyway, we waited somewhere to have a bit of grub. So of course I went over there and laid the law down and I told them, I said, well, I'm not sitting over there, I said, in the dirt. I said, you don't sit in the dirt, do you? Because you've got a canteen over there, which they had. Like the gardeners and all that, they had a canteen, see? And I said, you've got a canteen in the room, mate. I said, we want one. I said, I don't expect to sit in black sand. I said, my God, I said, I don't do that at home. I said, I've only got orange boxes and things like that. I said, but I'll sit on them. I said, and also we sweep the floor up. So we ain't got no dirt. Mm-hmm. Even if we ain't got no mess. So, they said, well, they think that's all right. I said, another thing while I'm at it. I said, we're entitled to a certain amount of extra rations, which it was, because it was hard work, yeah. So much extra cheese. I said, well, what's happened to all this extra tea and extra cheese, what we're supposed to have? So they said, hard work, but I had an extra allowance of tea and cheese, especially at work, cheese. So they said, well, we don't know about that. I said, well, you better find out, because if you don't, I said, oh, I'm going to. So I came about how they like me. And the manager's name was Holmes, and the others was a. Well, I don't know what it was even. Anyway, I should make up rhymes about Mr. Holmes comes from Woodford Town. Where's Mr. Holmes who comes from Woodford Town? In the office lying down, window wall chaps, window wall. See, all these things I should write and cook up. Anyway, I go over there and I said, well, we ought to have a place. I said, not only that. I said, we should be able to go up that canteen. I said, that's not built especially for gardeners. I said, that's built for the, also for the people who do the work. And that's not gardeners who roll up here. I said, at 10, 11 o'clock in the morning, so they like me. They couldn't sack me and I couldn't leave. Mm. See, that was a position. You couldn't leave a place. See, and they couldn't sack me. And that's the time to get me in the army. I said, well, I said, I've had a, I had 12 years of it. I said, so that won't do you no good. I said, because I'm used to that. I said, but I'll tell you what I'll do. I said, I'll shift off the bleak firm when you've got here reserved. Of course, they said they had a reserved occupation. They couldn't do without a firm. So they kept out of the army. Half of them were no more bleak reserved than that fireplace. I mean, what they could do and what they couldn't do. They couldn't do so all that somebody else couldn't do. They changed the job. Well, that was easy for a start. But anyway, we finally got up to canteen, so they was getting lamb and green peas and, you know, no potatoes for dinner. We was getting fish and chips. Oh, I thought, so well, I don't know, this ain't right. Anyway, neither. So I had another meeting. So we had a meeting. I said, another meeting. I said, talking about this lamb and green peas and stuff you have. I said, well, we have fish and chips. I said, well, my idea, I was thinking it'd be better if we had lamb and green peas and new spats, I said, one day, or wherever it was, and you had the fish and chips. The bloke said, another thing, I said, you drink the tea that we're entitled to. I said, a number of hours you put in, and they said, work. I said, don't entitle you to no tea. I said, you ain't no hard workers. But we're the hard workers. I mean, I wasn't trying to tell them. No, it was. And so they say, you can't expect the governor to drink out of a tin mug. I said, I don't care if he drinks out of a gold jug. I said, all he's doing is drinking my tea. That's what I'm worried about, I said. Not what he drinks out of. So we're willing to even let them have a drop, I said, but we're not willing to let them have it all. So I said, we want some green. We got it. So I said, we'll do this alternatively. I said, we'll have the green peas and batter pudding, I said, and the noob spuds and the rest of it. You, I said, can have the fish and chips. And you know that old car in there, well, she, your mama knows her, she used to, her husband worked in a co-op in Stratford when I was there. She was a cook there. Mm-hmm. And see, she thought this up, we could get early morning, cup of tea or wherever it was there. But she tried to make out, she ain't got this, ain't got that. And the bleeding chips had come up one day. Well, one of the blokes took it over, well, I was going to take it over to bleeding town hall. So, well, yeah, I'll tell them, these are coming to Belson. black as bleak nuggets. They was chips, but they burn them up, give them to us. So anyway, we finally got over that. Then there comes an order to say that when the siren sounded, you must take cover and come out afterwards. So of course the bloke up on the top, there was two of you up on the top first, then there was one. But Georgie, this bloke what died, and the pussy squeaking about me being elected, he died. And they wanted someone on the top. See, well, I used to go in the shelter, and stop in there until the old clear sounds, like the others did. But after time, all the governors come out and the shelter stood there. So they was full frightened of the bleeding guns, they was, the Germans. See, so they used to come out before the old clear sounded. Not me, I sat in the bleeding doorway, see. And I know I was entitled to be there because it said so on the notice board. See, that, you take cover until the all clear is sounded. See, that's the general order. That was an order that was on throughout the country. But these, as I say, they were frightened of the bleeding governor, and they thought, well, it's all quiet now, we'll go out. That's because they were scared of the bleeding governor's coming out, looking. I wouldn't. I sat there in the front there, and like this, when I used to go to a meeting, I used to smoke a rolling fags up out of a tin. Just a big bleeding all, but that's all it was. Because he called me over, he said, the foreman. He said, you don't run in there, because you're frightened. He said, do you? So I said, no. So he said, you run there to be bleeding auger, don't you? I said, that's right. I said, I do. He said, I'm going to continue to be auger. I said, because it says take cover. I said, no, it's not a take cover. So he said, well, we want somebody up the top, we won't run away. He said, because when they took cover, the iron that was melting was all clogged up, and that chopped the bash about with bars and things. It was a great big cylinder for your pipe. You used to throw coke, limestone, and iron and something else. You used to chuck on it in layers. And it used to melt and come down the bottom of his iron, and of course you used to tap it out and it ran into the great big skips, you know, you've seen it. And the crane would pick it up and coil it round, see. So he said, well, I want someone up the top. He said, don't run away when the air raid shelter sounded. I said, well, I'm praying and all. I said, I might probably run away. He said, but I'll give you more money if you will, and I won't run away. See? As a matter of fact, the only time I did run away was when they buzz bombs come round, and one was circling round the top of us. And I ran home because Amy, my wife, was in dead bed upstairs, and I knew where she was. And it landed on Coburn Road, the back of your college, on that bridge. Mm-hmm. That was the first one down. It was pretty close. But anyway, apart from that, whenever the air raids used to come, I used to stand up and watch them, especially when the rockets come. And they had a good view of practically around London, where the rockets had never made no noise. The buzz bombs did. But the rockets didn't. The only thing you heard there when they crashed, when they exploded. Of course, and I went up the top there, and where you sat, put it on the scale, way out under where it is, and under where it is, so much as I had it all to a T. And sometimes I used to get blocked up down below. There's a trapdoor holding it up. And the night you sat and knocked the bar out, and the trapdoor fall down, and all the residue was supposed to fall down straight. But half of it was clogged up with your stuck to the walls inside, so they get bleeding great bars and chop away, you know. Well, it was hard work. I never had none of that. I made sure that mine went on there and it got, you know, properly done. And you knew I could do the bleeding job. I never got bothered. I went and I had it weighed up so that I never used to put it on a scale. I bet I could pick any weight of pig iron up and just had to mix it with all sorts of stuff of iron, you know, scrap iron, old irons and flat irons and stoves used to come in, chuck them all on, see. In the lime and clean them, and of course the rest of it, the coke would melt them, and when it went down below, it'd come out as iron, whatever it was, see, put the right measurements in. And of course, I'd get a lump of iron, you've got to walk right up to the face of the furnace, because the face of the furnace was never had a great big opening. And you had to walk practically up to it before you aimed it, you know, bring a great lump of iron, but a little bit, because you're chucking. And the coke, I found out, yeah, how much you weighed. Well, I weighed a scaleful, and I nearly enough, I tried a couple, And I thought, before I throw this on, I'll try it for weight. And I found out I got the exact, you know, about 5 and 2 or 3 knobbles, I got the exact amount of coke. So I had the job sewn up. When I used to tap up at night, I'd come down and pull the bars down. The old lot used to come out, what was left, you know, what I'd never used, I didn't want. Well, it got to be come out, otherwise it'd stick up in, you'd never get it out, and it'd be a lot of hard work. It used to all spread over the floor, like in a kind of a ditch. And then I'd sort out what was left of the coke and the iron, like, at night. The coke I could use again, and that, of course, that'd go up the top again in skips. Anyway, I never carried anything up, because we had a crane, and that used to lock onto the lorries or wherever it was. Big iron skips, you know, and bring it up, swing it up to me, and I'd unload it and put it down where I wanted it. And that was it. You know, he said, you ain't in there, don't run away. He said, because you're bright. He said, you run away at me, bleak north, really. He said, you must be Irish. Yeah.
When did Johnny and Alan get evacuated? Was it right at the beginning of the
war? They went down to, well, Oxford.
Yeah.
And a place called, just outside Osney Town, just outside of Oxford Station, you go down the bottom, there's a little wooden, brick bridge leads over a bit of a ditch or river or whatever they call it, and there's 2 or 3 rows of houses, and there's the Thames here, and the houses, one lot's got the Thames both sides of it, and they have to come right up here to get off. You come out your house, you're on a bit of a pavement, but you have to walk up here. You can't walk straight out because it's the Thames. Sounds a bit. But then there's the other side one, there's about 3 lots it was. And the side where Johnny and Ellen was, they was at the 3rd one over, because they'd come out there, walk up the top, there was a pub up the top. And there was this little bridge. Walked over there and crossed the road, and it would just turn left, and it was Oxford Station. When I first went down, I knew it was Osney Town, Oxford. I was asking everybody where Osney Town was. One bloke said, well, it's ain't here. He said, you'd have to get a train to here, there, and everywhere. Of course, blimey, roaming all around the country, it would. And I said to the four, I said, but he knows better. So I said, where's Osney Town? He said, down the bottom right, he said, and across the road, he said, over that little bridge, he said, you're in it. And he says, that's down the road. I've been roaming all around Bleak and Cave, he's trying to find his place. And when I went there, she had a lovely, and her husband had been a butcher. And well, they looked after them as they was around, and their son, one son worked in the colleges, so he took us round. I mean, Amy, and showed us the colleges and narrowgated places where they used to sit and do their work, all iron and cobblestones. 2 or 3 colleges he had, and he took us in and out of several of them, because they got one at the end. They stand a bit of a, as I remember it, had a, one at the end and then a bit of a rectangular greenery affair, and up the top was a, I don't know, was it a church or like a spire or something where they had to climb up, stick bleeding pots in it on top of it. Mm-hmm. I think that's what it was. Now, you can get to there from Osley Town, you come along the banks of the Thames, and you come to a place where you can come up and up the stairs, and you're in the street where the colleges are on the other side of the road. Mm-hmm. So that's the way we used to go, that's the way we went when he showed his son, his name was the youngest one. Well, the others, I forget what job they had, but they bought the kids bleeding clockwork trains, they bought this and they bought. They had more stuff than ever we could afford to buy them, you know, but we had much money.
Can you remember the names of
people? Yeah, Pepler. Pepler was their name. They lived in Osney Town.
Did Johnny and Alan stay together there?
Yes. They've both been there. I asked them how they came to get them, so. Son said, the eldest one said, well, he said, I went up to top to pick them out. He said, well, he said, I wasn't looking for anything particular. He said, I saw these 2. He said, and I took them. I was lucky. And, of course, they went and had their own bedroom. And when I went down to visit them, and I tell you, they took us round. Mum didn't go first, but she did after all. Amy, she didn't go first because she had that trouble, that heart trouble.
Yeah.
And when I went in, piano in the front row, and they all had everything there. And I said, it's on a Sunday. So I said, well, I'll leave you here to have your dinner. So I'm going out and find myself somewhere, have a bit of drink. You ain't going nowhere, she said. You're going to stop here. And I'm on about going out. She's looking for grub. She said, you're welcome to stay with us, and that's what you're going to do. So, of course, so I stayed in that dinner and tea with him. And Joyce, he's a girl. Oh, she's a lucky girl, she was. No, you know, very gentle sort, but she was a great, one of the best-tempered girls, or best-looking girls, for that matter, that ever I've seen. She was a great girl, she was. Nothing was so much trouble for her to do, you know, to make you feel at home. So, of course, so I slept with the kids that night as well. They wouldn't let me go and find no lodgings. So I slept in with the kids, they better go in with them. So I went to bed with them and in their bedroom, like, and stopped there. Well, next time, Mum came with me, and of course, they put us up for the night. I had plenty of room and plenty of money. Went up the top to the pub, took me up the top. One bloke was a bit, one of the sons, I forget when he was very, he was a bit crackers, I think, taking him out of him. Could he go and put a tip on it and say, on the car and say, well, when that's gone, and everybody has drinks on it. And when it's gone, he said, I'll put some more in. But he had some queer old ways. He was always on the rail with the others. So the others were temperament entirely different to his. But as far as we were concerned, he never had any never had any bother.
Did Johnny Allen stay with him until the end of the war?
Eh?
Did Johnny and Allen
stay with him? No, what? you know me. And Amy was the same as your mother would be. She wanted to get the place a bit tidy because they were coming up to see us. See, he had a car, John, the eldest one. He had a car, I forget their names, all of them. But I was coming up to see us, so I thought, well, we had Lincrusta paper around the wall, so I thought I'd varnish it. And I varnished the bleaching chairs and all. Of course, when I came, it wasn't dry. Get a couple of them, Mary. You know, bleating chairs, and well, somehow I removed it because they brought the kid with us, and they gave us a ride over the flats in their car, took the kids and all, showed them around. They had the balloons over there, then, you know, the what they shove up, keep the airplanes up, the brims. And of course, when we got home, had a bit of tea and that, the kids wouldn't go back. The only thing they didn't want to go back, so that was the end of that. Of course, they departed and left them with us. So, of course, then we got down to. And I sent them some of their toys. They had broad packs. I sent them down to them. No, they was good people.
How long did they stay with them?
Hey?
How long did they stay with them?
Oh, they were for a few months, from right through the summer. I think, you know, they've all got to know them and that. And, of course, you know what my kids are. Once they see their mother and father, they're stepping all together. You see, so they stayed. But while we were there, I went up the top and played darts, and they asked me what I played. I said, yeah, I do. I said, but they got wooden darts, you know, they got wooden bodies. We're up here, we play with brass, and 5 and 20s we do up here. 5, 20, 15s, and so and so. Up there, they got a but one ball that goes right round the old figures, and they got wooden darts. So anyway, I said, well, I ain't much got with it. I said, I'd never use a wooden dart, which you hadn't. And anyway, I told my friend, he said, thought you could, you couldn't play. And there was a game. And I wanted three, you know, one double one, and bonk, I mean, here's it, I've been playing, and we like with these big wooden darts. So I thought you said you couldn't play. I said, I never played on a dart, this dart ball before, and I hadn't. Well, because I could play darts, I wasn't bad at it, mind you. I got hold of my own, me and George used to go round. Sunday morning, while Amy and his wife cooked the dinner, because it was a regular thing then, the men went out while the wife cooked the dinner Sunday morning, the only time they got off, because he worked all day Sunday, Saturday, remember? 4 o'clock Saturday, there was no Saturdays off, worked all the week and that before 4 o'clock Saturday. Mm-hmm. So the only time we got off was that and Sunday. So we used to go around the pub Sunday, you know, all around us. And they used to play darts in there. Well, if you played, if you lost, you bought the opposition who beat you out of fights. I went and played one, you know, 40 yard pint, but it got so that when you go around, you all got to know one another. You, if you won and they got beer there, they wouldn't say, no, I don't want it. They wouldn't be the same as us. We won and we got beer, saying, no, we don't want it. So you say it was got more like a friendly, and you know, only, but we didn't do bad, we didn't yours, we could hold our own. And I used to get a pint for, get three trebles. Well, I wanted a bit of doing, but I walked in the oak, I think it was. One in there, one Sunday morning, bang, bang, bang. Pint here and go around, three trebles, you know, 360s. Not on the same board, three of them, one there, one there, one there. I plonked them in. No, but times was, you know, times was hard.
When the bombing was going on, were you involved in sort of putting the fires out of the bombs and everything? Did you do that?
Was it what?
Well, when the bombs came down, you know, they set fire to the houses and everything.
Yeah, I was involved. Well, everybody was. Next door to us, an old girl was running up the yard with water. You're not supposed to chuck water on magnesia, is it? Magnesium, yeah, she was chucking it on. Old Mother Fisher. And of course, her crash went there. And I thought, that's how our house is gone. It's what it sounded like. Because when I looked around and grit in there, and I thought, well, there's old Mother thing we bought in the back. She was a private car, she was. But she was jovial. I should make him a cup of tea, see, when I got the chance, when the gas was on. So one morning, night, I crept in the kitchen, and I can hear him all in there, come out, come out. See, to me, like, especially me, Amy. So I went out, and that fire burned solid on the top of the bleeding roof. That one similar to that one, and that went off, oh, not far away, and all crashed, but it seemed to me, because we didn't know what it was for a start. We thought there was, you know, planes been shot down and was coming down or where it was. See, and they got no clue. Nobody told us. But suddenly everybody knew, but then at the particular time, they were like, tell these planes alight. You know, didn't think of blinking bombs flying along. And of course, as I come out, so it shot over the top of me, you know, and the bleeding noise it made, and it cut out and dropped somewhere, over Hackney Wick somewhere. Dropped with a white heart. Let's go round the White Hart, take some stuff round here now and again. They had a battery round here, you know, Rocky battery and others. And Mum and we went round there, the bleeding Germans, and wiped a lot out. They'd killed all the, wiped the bleeding guns out there and round here and brought it over there. Oh no, of course, when the Americans come into war, where we had our so called barracks, it was a banging in half hours. Lay down sort of battery air raid. We never had enough bleeding guns around London to take care of them. But once the Americans come in, they bring it round, so it was thump, pump, 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 all night long. So bleeding batteries must have been hundreds. And then, of course, they shifted a lot towards the coast so that when they come over, they bomb out here across Kent as they come. Of course, the officers stood up and watched them go over. And they should make for London, because they had all the guns up there, and they'd quick Tempest and faster planes and Hurricanes and Spitfires. Then to the American somewhere, had some top speed thing. Of course, when these flying thing with bobs used to come out, they used to shoot them down. The guns never hit, and these did. So there wasn't hardly any got through to London to finish. They got in out in the fields because nobody. I mean, they never let nobody know. They wouldn't broadcast where they felt. For some reason, the Germans were only too glad to find out where the bleeding things were dropping, and they didn't know. See, they couldn't find out, either. No, so it was pretty grim, but I think everybody stuck it remarkably well. They went down to shelter and all that, and they had concerts, and they had my other bleeding brown on the. There was no underground near us, as I say, it was a tunnel already dug. And it wanted to be lined out like the central line, where that is now. You went into Stratford Station, turned it right, walked along the rail. Because there were some lines I took, some of them down, took Nelly down, that's Mother's sister, Amy's sister, Nelly. And took her down, pitch bleak and dark, tugged her over. What we were struggling over was the railway lines of the LNER, see? Right there. Now, when after the war, well, Amy died, but my mother died first, and Amy about 1948. Well, up Angel Lane, you know how that used to get packed. Well, she wouldn't have got up there because all the stallholders do, because his father-in-law sat in here about four barrels up that lane. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like his old wallet in the Salloway Arms, he called it. Salloway, it's up the lane on the left, next to the Salvation Army. And where she got this fever from, I forget now, I'll tell it in a minute. I mean, she'd be up about 3 or 4 in the bleak morning, scrapping bleak and celery for there. All mornings, winter morning, I had some myself, but I was a man in. I'd have to be up there getting stuff ready for his barrows.
Well, they're fruit and vegetable,
aren't they? Yeah, and barrow celery, selling bleak, scrapping bleak and celery, because they never soaked it with dirt all over it. Like they don't know how to clean it. So I did mine before I sold it. What fever is it, they call it?
Scarlet fever?
No, Jim. It leaves you with a weak heart unless you watch it. Use it too, leaves you with heart trouble. I'll get there sometime, someone will know. Mum will know. Boy, I'll stir.
Yeah, sort out later on.
Hey?
So you're saying what happened when she died, right?
Well, I jumped a few, but a couple of times I was on the buses. And of course I used to go to work in and out, and I sat three cross doubles and treble like. I feel Bob, I never used to let them go out of indoors though first. That was first, and I didn't drink beer. So just go and get a pipe and that's the twice old Mother Foster used to put them on. And Shepherd was a bookmaker, and it's one of his sisters, Nellie. She used to come around and click around the houses. Mm-hmm. So she had anybody come around and take the bet, and if there's any winners to come, she'd come back. And I'd give mine to Foster next door. You remember, don't you, Miss Foster? And she's put mine on. I always used to give her a drink. Of course, Amy and that was in it. The kids, they all used to be in it. And I got it, I'd pick up. And when I come in one night from the buses, there's a note on the table, say the dogs is one, mate. See? We was mates too. And I picked it up and then looked at it, and of course they had a nice price and all. Another time she went up the top to get a paper. And when she come down, I used to do second dogs, you know. Like what a paper used to have a star on it, because that's extinct now. But the dog they give for second, well, it's like the Herald, the dog they give for second, it's a back, and it's to come up more time, and the selection taking give it in the win. Well, the point was, she was getting worse and was going in and out of hospitals, and I was still working on a battery, like coming home and looking at all the kids. But Johnny, because he used to do the help the cleaning. Well, I mean, he like a bullet, you get all met with one end and bash it and all. So he's going to wallop it like that. And Alan just go and get the errand. And of course, Alan, he's fly. And he goes up the top, gets the errand, and he comes back with the money and all. The one forgot to take the money, he said. Yeah, but I know him. But he's very amicable. Where Johnny's something like you, he's got a will that he won't give him. But Alan, you know, you can wheedle around him. But of course, Alan said, "I said you see him outside. You ball up the street. When are you going to get this errand?" Said it for Evan. He'd be talking to Jerry Gould or one of the two movies mates. He said, "All right, they'll go now. Just go off and make no bones about it." So Johnny used to go up and clean up, and Alan used to. So there was it. And of course, I went in one night to the hospital. She was bad. The doctor said, "He wants to speak to you." So he spoke to me. He said, "Mr. Sir," he said, "I can't give her a bed. I can't give her a new heart." But when I was in Queen Mary's, to digress a bit and go back a bit, they used to come in and visit her any hour of day, bringing fish and chips and bottles of start and a bit. I'd been those round the bed, the people would, proper. St. Mary's down there, upper road here, Plaster. You know what I mean? Mm. Yeah, by Plaster, such a road leads right down to County Town. Down there. Of course, I used to go in there. She came out of there. She went into Whips Cross. She come out of there. I could have got a car especially later on and bring her out of there. But I said, now look, I said, you're not to do any work. I said, I'll do that. I'm quite capable. So she said, well, I don't like you to come home and do it, mate. She said, you've got to work all day. I said, no mind about that. I said, I want to come home and see you sitting in that chair, I said. Of course, while you're going on, I said, you won't be. I said, that upset me more than it will doing a bit of work. But I was real knocked, I'm real choked, and I still am, so I don't want to talk about it. And, because she went to work, went to somewhere, because the doctor came around, he said, when she was ill, he said, I could get her, he tried to get away, and he couldn't get her anywhere. She said, I know Bleakwell, he said, they've got beds in there, he said, but, Gardner, his name, a young doctor. He said, I know they've got beds, he said, but it's not going to be racking them. He said, it won't get me anywhere. He said, it won't get us nowhere, he said. I've got a, well, he said, he set off a Whips Cross. Well, this is the second time. She went to Whips Cross, and doctor told me, he said, I can't give her a new heart, he said. And well, I don't give much, you know, sort of much hope sort of business. So anyway, I went in there direct from coming off buses. First thing she said when I got in, like, I said, hello, mate. She said that when the nurse came over, she said, make him a cup of tea, nurse. She said, I know he hasn't had anything. I know he's been straightened. He's going to be all the bleeding while. So the nurse said, certainly. She's in oxygen tent then. So they come around and make the beds. So I said to the nurse, I said, well, I'll go outside while you make the beds. And I went outside, I sat down, I'd been out there about half a minute or so, Nurse come out and said, we come to see your wife, she's had a turn. When I went in, she's bleeding dead. Yeah, that's how shocking, huh? But before that, when I spoke to her through the tent, she said, I was nearly crying, I was crying. And she said, don't cry, mate, she said, I've suffered enough. She said, and don't stop on your own, she said. She said, because it won't suit you, and be careful who you get. She said, because with your temperament, a bad woman will crucify you. That's what she said. Think about me, not herself, me. That's just before I went outside.
Yeah.
When was that? 1948. Yeah, I think it was 1948. That's right. And of course, then I met your mother. See, well, how I met your mother was George and her, like my brother, because she worked on the schools and so he worked on the council. He said, "I know someone." He said that suits you, John. He said, "A decent person." He said, "I know her." He said. Well, I was conducting on the buses in, funnily enough, and just going round by younger Martin, your mum sat up in the corner. She wasn't so plump as you now, of course she was a lot younger. And she said, you look, and I've looked like your brother. So I turned round and, she said, your brother George, your mother said this. So I said, you must be the person we're talking about. I said, stop on, I said. When we got to the top, you better chuck them all over. But that time, then you go yourself right round where there's a bit of the Oxford pictures and stop there around the back of Lake Street. And then you come out when it's time and come round and start Broadway again. So I stand there, I said, come all the way up. Of course, going up there, went round the corner and sat there talking. And I said, well, so I'll see you again. Where shall I see you? She said, I'll come round your house. So she was working on the scores and that. So she said, come round and. You know, well, when I was working that, when I was off, come out, she'd come around and bring tea, like what she'd nicked out of that thing, me Bob. And I cooked the dinner and that, and the kids took to her, put Johnny and Alan like ducks to her water, you know. I wasn't bright because I knew her, was it? I mean, couldn't have had nobody better than her. So without having a lot of money, Jim, And all I had a lot of blatant travel. I've always had a couple of good girls that you couldn't buy. Well, I wouldn't sell them anyway. Not all the blatant change showing her. That's your mother, and not and I mean the other kid's mother. Yeah, so of course we got married and went up, what's his name? So went up home for that. Up in the Brompton Road, you know. Of course she'd come in handy having a mother in law there because when I was on the track from Allgate to Ilford, I have a tea can and put it on the hot ball for the stop roll outside their house, bus stop. Could hot ball down leave the can and pick it up coming down full up with tea and a couple of sandwiches or wherever it was, see. Very handy. Like when I was on that run. Yeah, it was alright, the old girl was a bit nasty now and again, like, but it's like everything else, everybody's got their way sometimes. But there was only the old man, of course, he was, well, you know him, he was generous. He'd give you all the blink coppers every week, didn't he? Hey? Father did. Well, my father was the same as that. The same sort, except, as I said, when I was a kid, he died in a lunatic asylum, and I'm blink sure they killed him because. My mother come home on a Saturday night. When she come, mother come home on a Saturday. Oh, she went to see him. She says, coming home Monday. And Monday morning, about 4 o'clock, there was a rat sat out on the door. And I heard my mother scream. I'm still hearing it now. They say, you can't remember when you were young, can't you? You can things like this because they stick in your mind like fire. And of course, I heard a scream. And when I read the telegram, of course, I could read. I was pretty good at all those subjects, very, very young. Couldn't write, couldn't draw. Wasn't much good at woodwork. Split the bleak wood in it, shove a nail in it. But there's lots of things I could do, and reading and arithmetic and things was on. And I read the telegram, it says, regret to say, inform you that your husband has passed away this Monday morning. Must have bleeding or killed him because he never.